Is that you in front of me coming back for even more of exactly the same? You must be a masochist. That's Frightened Rabbit. I'm Blake Murphy, and this is Jays Talk Plus. Bit of a masochist feel as a Toronto sports fan over the last few days. From the Raptors arguably losing on draft lottery night to the Leafs inarguably and uninspiring press conference to now your Toronto Blue Jays losing an odd one on Friday, Ernie Clement with a liner off the pitcher that ends at the feet of the first baseman to end that one, and then getting you to bite maybe on the pump fake that was Saturday's very fun comeback before returning to form yesterday and squandering a strong Alek Manoah start. It is the fifth consecutive three-game series the Toronto Blue Jays have lost. They are 18-22. They are a million games back of the wild card of the Baltimore Orioles, who they'll now see a couple more tough series ahead before that two-week reprieve of lighter schedule. And even with that lighter schedule ahead, would you bet on this Blue Jays team to take full advantage of it? Would it make you feel all that better if they did beat up on the White Sox, the Tigers, the Pirates over the course of 13 games? Maybe you felt that way Saturday. Maybe you felt like that could be a turning of the tides. It was not, at least for one day. We'll see now with the Baltimore Orioles. On the call yesterday for that disappointing game that had a pretty big silver lining was Dan Schulman, voice of your Toronto Blue Jays. He joins us now. Dan, how we doing? How was your weekend?
It was good. So on a personal note, I took Saturday off. My oldest son graduated from college down in the States, so I went down and saw that awesome dad day. Unfortunately, I missed the one really exciting, you know, the win and the great game on Saturday when they had the big comeback. But everything is going great. The sun is shining right now in Baltimore, unlike what the forecast says the next couple of days. But there is going to be a baseball game tonight. And we'll see how they do. It's not going to be easy, obviously. The Orioles are legitimately one of the best teams in baseball, and the Blue Jays are going to have to play really well to get a win or two down here.
Yeah, that Orioles team, 26-13, first in the American League, second in all of baseball to only the Phillies, who we just saw recently. And Dan, as much as I'd like to poke fun and say, well, the game you missed was the one they won, and there's a causation here with the correlation. It's not as if they won a bunch of games while you were last off. So you're in the clear here. Congrats to your son. Happy Mother's Day to everyone out there as well who was celebrating with their mothers yesterday. So yesterday we got to see, you know, bright pink socks, Alek Manoah on the hill, a bit of a aesthetically an interesting one from him. Performance-wise, a very interesting one from him. He ends up going pretty deep into this game, gives the Blue Jays seven innings. The three runs he allowed were unearned because of an Ernie Clement error that kept an inning going for a Carlos Santana home run. Dan, what did you see from Alek Manoah yesterday at a high level in terms of, look, he's not going to throw seven innings every time out on just 78 pitches, but unquestionably a big step forward as he looks to get back to being a major league pitcher.
Unquestionably. And they didn't get the win, and that matters. But bigger picture, as you said, there was a big silver lining there yesterday. The two things that to me jumped out were his command, with the exception of a couple of moments. In the second inning, he walked a guy on four pitches that I think fell behind 1-0 or maybe 2-0 with the next batter, but got out of that. And then obviously the pitch to Santana was not where he wanted it, and that was a 2-0 count. So he paid the price in that moment. But for the most part, his command was great. And even at his best, Alek Manoah was never a command guy, right? I mean, he kept you off balance. He would run it in on your hands. He'd get you to chase the slider in a way. But I thought he looked great yesterday. And the second thing was the changeup, which, as I'm sure you've discussed, he only threw one of them in his first start. And I think he threw about 18 or 19 of them yesterday and got, you know, like four, five, six outs with him. Again, unfortunately, the Santana home run was on a changeup. And changeups, maybe more than any other pitches, when you miss in a bad spot, they're going to get hurt and they're going to get hit. And but there are things to build on, and they desperately need him right now, hopefully to grab that fifth spot, because they don't have a lot of other options. And I know we focus on offense, as we should. But if he could step in and just be a solid contributor in the fifth spot, that helps him going forward.
Certainly. And look, the offense is the biggest problem, but this is also a starting rotation that, despite the big names and some strong performances, is 21st in starter ERA so far. So Could definitely use that there. You mentioned a couple things there. Yeah, it was the second inning where he walked Willy Castro on four pitches, none of them particularly close. He then kind of got a gift from Alex Kirilloff. He'd thrown six balls in a row. Kirilloff expands the zone and grounds into a double play on what would have been ball two or ball three. Even the Santana one, though, you know, that's a changeup that was well outside. It probably should have been a 3-0 count, but Santana's going to do what Santana does to the Toronto Blue Jays. Okay, so the changeup was a big one, like you mentioned. 19 of those, he got four whiffs. He got a called strike with it. I know we've talked a lot about the slider because that's what's going to generate swing and miss for him. If it's on, especially if he can get that going strike to ball away from righties, we've seen him use it pretty effectively in these first couple starts against lefties trying to drop it back foot. Is the changeup as important in your mind as the slider? Just like when we think of, you know, split neutrality and being able to get a lineup like the Twins out where they load up six lefties?
When they load up six lefties, absolutely. It might even be more important. But against righties, it's a non-factor. He's right. Not going to throw, or hasn't shown that he's going to throw the changeup against righties. So I would still think on, if you add it all up, the slider's a little bit more important because he'll face some lineups with five or six righties, I would imagine. And the slider's a huge deal there, and the changeup is a non-factor. But I think at this point, all four of his pitches have to play. Right now, I'm not sure he can blow through a lineup with two or three. He's got to have all four working. And, you know, he was efficient yesterday. He gave the bullpen a bit of a break. But again, it's for him, it's bigger picture looking forward against a good offensive team in Minnesota. You know, inarguably one of the top seven or eight offensive teams in baseball coming into this game. His next one will be against Tampa Bay, and that'll be a challenge as well. But I think he needs all four pitches to be going. And he needs, you know, maybe not A-plus command, but pretty good command, and he had it. His energy was great yesterday. You could see that. You just feel terrible for Ernie Clement, right, who is a sure-handed guy and makes that play 99 times out of 100 and actually committed two errors, mysteriously enough, in the game yesterday. And, you know, if they could do it over again, I was a pitch away from saying to Buck at 2-0, you know, I know first base isn't open, but there is a base open, and Christian Vasquez is on deck, and then boom, home run. So, but that's hindsight, and, you know, Santana's just hurt them so many times in so many uniforms over so many years. You know, he's about to knock Mountcastle off the perch, I think, so depending on what happens the next 3 days. But, they need, you think about what's going to make this team better, and it's not a short list. It's a long list, and Manoa, or that fifth spot, is definitely on it. But, again, hopefully this is not just a blip, hopefully a good step in the right direction.
I had in my notes, life on the line. Let's lower it from life on the line. Let's be less serious about it. Your pregame meal on the line, and the Jays have to get Carlos Santana or Ryan Mountcastle out. Which one of those guys do you think the Jays have a better chance of getting out? It's pretty ridiculous, the back and forth those two have had against this team.
It is. Well, let me tell you, because I did it about half an hour ago, 52 career games for Mountcastle against the Blue Jays, 330, 15 home runs, 43 runs driven in. And then I said to myself, yeah, but I thought it feels like they handled him pretty well last year. Like maybe, you know, the tide has turned. And I went back and looked, and it was no. He still hurts them. And he's a good player, but he's not an all-star. You know, he's not a great, great player, but he's a great player against the Blue Jays. But I think if I had to take those two, right now I think I would take Mountcastle. Just because Santana's a switch hitter, can get you from both sides. Maybe I like some of the hard-throwing righties with sliders. Their chances a little bit better against Mountcastle. But you can be sure it'll be mentioned once when he comes up at some point tonight.
Yeah, at least the Orioles no longer have Adam Frazier, who's also one of those guys. It seemed a little intentional when they went out last year and got another Blue Jays killer. Now he's hanging out with the Royals. So, one last question on the Alek Manoah front. We've obviously tracked this a lot over the last couple of years. He was so encouraging in 2021, on Cy Young ballots in 2022, unplayable last year. Internally, you know, look, we can talk about, we can frame this a couple different ways, and there's obviously the bar that people will have in mind, which is that he had a sub-250 ERA 1 year. I don't know that that's coming back or even needs to, but internally, what is the hope that Alek Manoah can get back to? Like, is it just grab the fifth spot and give us something every 5 days? Is there a hope or a belief he can get back to being, you know, let's say a number three starter in a, it won't be in this rotation because the rotation's so deep, but longer term, that caliber of guy? Or is the focus just much more narrow right now, which is just get back to being a regular major leaguer?
So I haven't asked that question specifically. I think the first hope is get back to being a regular major leaguer, just a contributor in the rotation who gives you a chance to win some games. I would guess that they think there's a possibility he could be a solid middle of the rotation starter. I know, and I know you know, even though he had the 2.24 ERA in the Cy Young finalist 2 years ago, that some of the underlying numbers were not as good as the year before, as 2021. But that can happen, right? You can have a great strand rate. You get out of situations, a little batted ball luck, whatever it is. So, I mean, he was terrific in both years. Don't get me wrong, obviously. But I would think that they are hoping. I don't think they're investing a lot of energy in saying, can we get him back to that spot? I think you got to go in stages. And the first stage is contributing member of a major league rotation. The next stage is, you know, can he move up the pecking order because he's doing pretty well, and now he's a middle of the rotation guy. So, and I don't put a lot of stock in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like Manoah was the opening day starter last year, right, over Gausman, and look how that turned out. Gausman was a Cy Young finalist, and Manoah finished the year not pitching at AAA. So these kinds of things worked themselves out very, very quickly. Yusei Kikuchi came into the season, indisputably, I think, as the number four. And he's making a charge at number one right now, the way that he's pitching, you know. So I'm not necessarily convinced players make out the lineup, as we tend to say sometimes. But I do think pitchers make out the rotation order with how they're doing. I think that's fairly cut and dried. And I think it's kind of up to how Manoah pitches. But he's incredibly important because they're spending an unbelievable amount of money on the rest of their rotation. And I think the most valuable thing in baseball is a cheap, good starting pitcher. And they really need one of those. Like a few years back, we would have thought Nate Pearson would be one of those. At this point, if he'd been healthy, maybe Ricky Tiedemann would be one of those. Like they've kind of fallen by the wayside or haven't happened yet. So on a number of levels, it's incredibly important for Manoah to be able to work this out.
It's also the Jays have done a very good job identifying free agent starting pitchers, but usually that's the riskiest place you can spend your money as well if you're going to make those free agent outlays. I'm glad you mentioned Kikuchi. This is a Monday show and we don't have shows on the weekend, so I barely get to mention whatever happened on Friday. But Kikuchi, the first Blue Jays pitcher to go 8 innings this year and only the 20th in Major League Baseball so far this year. Fewer than 2% of starts around baseball going 8+. So nice to see that from Kikuchi. They didn't get the win Friday. There just wasn't enough there with the bats. That was the case on Sunday with this Manoah start as well. Dan, there are two things that I know you're fond of saying. One is that these things have a tendency of working themselves out when it comes to injuries and roles and things like that. The other, momentum is as real as your next day's starting pitcher. I think people were hopeful that Saturday could have been a turnaround in some sort of ethereal way with, hey, they hadn't come back all year, they did it. They hadn't scored 10 runs all year, they did it. First time getting 20 guys on base, etc. We didn't see it at all. Had you thought that, you know, maybe there could be some rollover from that game Saturday?
So I don't say the momentum is as good as the next day starting pitcher as often as I used to. And I think this team is a good example of that. You can go out and have a starting pitcher throw a great game, but this team can lose 2-0. So I've kind of put that one away a little bit, but I definitely believe in the first one. You're hopeful that there would have been some carryover from Saturdays to Sunday. Two things, though, one in advance. Bailey Ober struck me as one of these, don't get cocky with this guy. You know, it's the invisible, the 92 with the extension and the height, and it jumps on you. And he did a great job throwing fastballs at the top of the strike zone and getting the guys who have trouble at the top of the strike zone to swing and miss there. So I was a little leery of Ober going into the game. And then I will freely admit, like so many other people, I was surprised at the lineup on Sunday, and they always have their reasons. But I did think Schneider would be leading off, and it's not like Schneider had success against Ober either. It's worth saying that. And I did think Jansen would be DHing. Now, would either of those things have made a difference? Who knows? So there wasn't a carryover, and yeah, it's disappointing because it was such a high on Saturday, and it was so out of the blue to see them just keep hitting and hitting and hitting. And not only that, the bullpen was fantastic on Saturday, right? They got all those great innings. It lined up with Richards and Swanson and Jimmy Garcia and Jordan Romano. And it looked like a really good baseball team on Saturday, you know, especially in the back half of the game when they came back. So, yeah, a very disappointing Sunday. No carryover at all from Saturday offensively. And we'll see. They get Corbin Burns tonight. So, you know, that's not a great place to be saying, hey, maybe tonight is breakout night again.
Yeah, Corbin Burns, whose cutter is one of the best fastballs in all of baseball. Opponents hitting 180 off of it, slugging just 315. Any lefties in the Jays lineup today, similar to what we just spoke about with Manoa, they'll see a lot of that nasty changeup from Corbin Burns. It'll be a tough meeting there. Jose Berríos is on the other side tonight. He has started to use a cutter. What have you made of that? Jose Berríos is kind of, against righties, shifted to more and more of a two-pitch pitcher, Dan, leaning on that sinker and the slurvy curveball. But against lefties, throws a lot of different stuff and is now working in that cutter. What have you made of that kind of pitch mix shift for Berríos early on?
I don't think he's using it all that much. I mean,
no.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it's like he doesn't throw it to righties, and I think it's maybe like 2-3-4 a game to lefties. So to be honest with you, I haven't thought it has been that big of a thing for him. I mean, the biggest change over the last couple of years, as far as I know, is fewer four-seamers and more two-seamers. Mm-hmm. And that's been a good change because they were walloping his four-seamer. And lefties have had a tough time with him with his two-seamer this year. Lefties have had a tough time in general. They're only hitting 147 against him. And again, I just know this because I've done a lot of my prep for tonight's game already. But against Philadelphia, the Harper hit a grand slam off him, and Cody Clemens hit a two-run homer off him. So they haven't gotten many hits off him, lefties, but they did a lot of damage in that last game. But I think, like Manoa, although they're obviously different pitchers, he needs all four to be working. And I'm talking about the four-seamers, the fourth. I'm not even putting the cutter into the conversation. To me, the cutter is a little... it's like almost like Kevin Gausman mixing in the odd two-seamer to a righty. It's just an extra little thing that he's kind of working on but hasn't really brought fully into the mix, and I guess he's not comfortable enough bringing it fully into the mix. So, but to me, for Berríos to be successful, all four need to be working. You know, he's a guy who year after year exceeds his Statcast numbers. Yep. and gets it done. There is some hard contact, and sometimes it's about, can you pitch out of a jam? Sometimes is you get a good defensive play behind you. He's very, very, very good. And he's been really good in seven of his eight starts this year. And I remember a couple, I think one of them was Houston back at the beginning, where he clearly did not have his wipeout stuff, his swing and miss stuff. And he got through it, six innings, one run or whatever it is. And I think he's done a really, really good job of pitching without his best stuff. For the most part, the one exception obviously being against the Phillies. But this Baltimore lineup is tough. It's a fairly short porch down that right field line, and he's going to have to be really good. Against the left-handed batters, I think he's going to have to get the slurve in under their hands for some swing and miss. He's going to have to get the changeup down and away for some chase. And I haven't seen as much, it doesn't feel like, of the what they call the front hip two-seamer, the two-seamer mm-hmm. to a lefty, where they kind of buckle a little bit and it comes back over the inside corner for a strike. When he's on, when he's electric, he's got that pitch, in my opinion. And I haven't seen as much of it the last couple of starts, I don't think. So that's something I'll be looking for against the lefties tonight.
Certainly. And that's always a risky one, because if that catches too much of the plate coming back, the reason you don't see a ton of sinkers sometimes righty to lefty is that two-seamer, if it comes back in, it's thought that kind of enters the bat path of a lefty. The Orioles, by the way, could have as many as seven left-handed hitters in the lineup today, because they have five lefties and a pair of switch hitters. Top of the lineup is Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman. Dan, this, like, the answer to this is fairly straightforward, but Gunnar Henderson in the early going here, maybe even surpass Adley Rutschman as this team's most important player, given the offense, given the quality of the defense at a premium position as well. I don't know how to frame a question about just how good this young Orioles team is. So I guess just how worried should the Blue Jays be that not only is this team good again, like everything we saw last year, everything we saw in 2022 that was like kind of flirting with it, the innocent climb, it's all real and it's all here to stay, it looks like.
It is. It's absolutely real. And I know people don't want to hear it and don't talk so much about the other team sometimes and all. It's all absolutely real. If like for the next five seasons, count this year, so this and the next four, if I said in the next 5 years, how many wins would they win? Like, what would you set the over under at? It's a big number. It's a big number. Like 500 might be a little crazy. 100 wins a year for 5 years is a little crazy. But if you set it at, you know, 95 wins a year for the next 5 years, I don't think that's crazy at all, because most of them are here, but they're not all here. And I don't care what Jackson Holliday hit when he came up. He's going to be a great major league player. Gunnar Henderson can win an MVP, and he can win it soon. And I think for Blue Jays fans, they know Adley Rutschman. I don't know if they know Gunnar Henderson as well, and I'm pretty sure they don't know a whole lot about Colton Cowser and Jordan Westberg. But they've got player after player after player who may not even be in his prime yet, and Jackson Holliday not here. And if they ever really start spending a little bit of money on pitching, then it's really a problem. They're great. They really are. And some of it is they were so bad for a few years. Obviously, they got high draft picks, but that's not all of it. They did a good job with their picks as well. Like, they're not all first-round picks. And if you weren't a first-round pick, if they took you in the second round, that means somebody else could have had you in the first round and passed on you. And so they've done, obviously, a really good job of drafting and developing in the last few years, again, with a lot of high picks. I get that. But they're really good, and they're young and athletic. And I thought that was one of the biggest things about the games last year. They're so athletic, and they can beat you so many different ways, you know. And I was watching their game from yesterday. I watched part of it last night when I got to the hotel here in Baltimore. And I heard Jim Palmer, who's a Hall of Famer and is in his 70s, say Gunnar Henderson is the most athletic shortstop he's ever seen. Not he's ever played with. He's ever seen. And Jim Palmer's not really a hyperbole kind of guy. Like, that's a big statement from him. So they're in pretty good shape there, you know, and they're in pretty good shape behind the plate. And their starting pitching is good. It's better than it used to be. And they're legit. 26-13. They've had a little bit of an easier schedule, I think, but still, they could easily win 100 games again. And you know, given how young their core is, I think they're going to be a real problem for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and like you said, they've done some work to add starting pitching. Corbin Burns, obviously, Kyle Bradish and Cole Irvin, who we'll see later in the series, are both off to very good starts here as well. Guys they've picked up in trade over the years. And then, yeah, you mentioned the later round pick. Kobe Mayo is another infield type who's banging on the door at AAA and was a fourth round pick. They mm-hmm. have done a real good job. And it's scary. And Gunnar Henderson has 12 home runs and 6 stolen bases and is OPSing like 1,000 and is also playing a premium defense at shortstop. It's scary stuff to look down at for the next couple of years. Dan, glad you got to Baltimore. Okay, glad you're back on the call. Enjoy the series, and thanks for taking the time out this morning.
You got it, Blake. Anytime. Have a good one.
Dan Schulman of Sportsnet on the call for this entire series, along with Buck and Hazel, Jamie and Joe on Blue Jays Central for you. I'll be with them tonight as well. Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the radio call. Shai Davidi on the ground for us in Baltimore. Yeah, it's a scary one. It is a very tough matchup. I mentioned the Orioles are 26-13. That's the best record in the American League. It's the second best record in all of baseball. They are fifth in weighted runs created plus, which kind of takes everything offensively. Park controls it and things like that. And hey, yeah, it might park control it, but you don't need to park control it necessarily if you have 7 lefties and you have a short porch in right field for 81 of your games. Gunnar Henderson leads off for that team generally. 12 home runs already and 6 stolen bases. Adley Rutschman, Ryan O'Hearn, and yeah, Ryan Mountcastle, Anthony Santander, guys who have done a lot of damage against the Blue Jays. I feel like Cedric Mullins always has a big moment in these series as well. And it's Corbin Burns, who is obviously very, very difficult to deal with. 2.83 ERA in the early going here. One of the best cutters in baseball. One of the best changeups in baseball. It's going to be tough going. The Jays, again, lost 2 of 3 on the weekend. They're now down to 18-22. That is worse than the AL East. They're 8.5 games behind Baltimore, even at this early juncture. 6 out of a wild card spot. Something to watch with this series. If they were to lose this series, that would not only be 6 three-game series in a row that they've lost, but it would mark the first time since 2019 that they've fallen 5 games below 500. So as much as it can still feel early and maybe only being 4 games under 500 doesn't feel that bad to you at this point, relative to what we've seen over the last couple of years, even when the Blue Jays were still on the climb back up, they haven't been in this bad away, especially this late into a season, in a while here, if they were to lose tonight, it would be the furthest under 500 they've been since 2019. And I talked about this with J.D. Bunkus earlier. He asked me, hey, you know, numbers stuff, is there anything under the hood that you'd look at and be really encouraged by? And the answer is probably not. They've been outscored by 47 runs, which is the second worst mark in the American League. And generally speaking, it's not perfect, but that is a good indicator of what's to come for you as much as your record is. That's the fifth worst in all of baseball. They're 27th in runs per game, 21st in starter ERA, 30th in bullpen ERA. You know, we're starting to see Vlad turn around, which is really, really nice. He's got hits in 12 of his last 13, and over those 13 games has a 975 OPS. Still not hitting for a ton of extra base within that, but when you're hitting over 400 and you're getting on base almost 50% of the time over a 13-game stretch, we'll take it. There was also some interesting new data made available today over at Baseball Savant, over at StatCast. So it's bat speed tracking. It's using the Hawkeye cameras, which take 300 frames a second from 12 different vantage points in the ballpark. We can now measure bat speed, and we can measure attack angle. The attack angle is exactly what it sounds like, the angle your bat reaches the ball. We can see how often a ball gets squared up. We can see how long or short a guy's swing is, things like that. You might see these numbers floating around Twitter and in articles. You might hear this brought up on the broadcast. I'm not going to touch it tonight, but Mike Petriello's on Blue Jay Central one day this week and surely will. I bring this up because A, we've teased that it's coming and it's interesting, but B, make sure when you look at these things, you know, bat speed is not the goal itself. There are hitters with poor bat speed or lower bat speed and who hit really well. There are guys with high bat speed who hit really poorly. It is a piece of information, but the fact that the Blue Jays are dead last in bat speed as a team is not in itself something we look at and say, oh, that's a failure. They don't have enough bat speed. It is interesting and worth investigating more that they have underperformed so dramatically on offense, and they're dead last in bat speed in the league. They're also bottom five in how often your bat speed is very, very hard, very, very fast. The Braves at the top of that list, Orioles near the top of that list. At the team level, I do think we'll see some correlations here. But if you see those numbers, don't overreact to them just yet, because we're all still learning how to contextualize all this stuff. Justin Turner, for example, on the slower end for bat speed, but because the bat to ball is so good, he's doing that with an intention. Luis Arraez is a guy with a slow bat speed who can hit 300 in his sleep. And then there are fast bat speed guys who, they swing fast and they swing long and they miss a lot. So just a note on that. We'll talk about it a lot over the coming weeks, I'm sure, as we learn more about it and are better able to contextualize it. Something we need to learn a little bit more about, more and more as the Jays play poorly, is what the future looks like. So we're going to take a break. We're going to go down on the farm. We're going to talk to our pal Doug Fox, who has covered the Blue Jays explicitly on the minor league system for years now, regular guests on our show. We'll do our first check-in of the year with Doug on what's going on down on the Blue Jays farm, which includes Aravis Martinez already reaching double digits in home runs for your AAA Buffalo Bisons. And Eric Pardino back on the radar, perhaps, as Arden teased on the broadcast over the weekend. We'll see. We'll take a break. We'll talk to Doug Fox as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's the Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays lose 2 of 3 on the weekend, including squandering a pretty good Alek Manoah start on Sunday. Only 78 pitches over 7 innings. Went 15 pitches, 12 pitches, 6, 10, 10 as the innings went along. Did get done in by a Carlos Santana 3-run home run. Those were unearned. The home run came after an Ernie Clement error that kept Alek Manoah from getting out of the 7th inning clean. Pretty encouraging stuff. Not going to tap dance and celebrate over one good start, just like we weren't after his one good start in AAA before his call-up, because these things aren't going to be linear and because there's still plenty to work on. But what a step forward for Alek Manoah. That is very encouraging to see. You also see some encouraging stuff if you take a look through the Toronto Blue Jays minor league system. even though they're a bottom 10 farm system in baseball, according to Baseball Prospectus, Baseball America, Fangraphs, MLB.com. There are always guys to keep an eye on. There are always guys raising their stock, dropping their stock too. Well, we like to focus on the guys raising their stock. We like to do that with Doug Fox of the Future Blue Jays newsletter. That's over on Beehive now. You can also check him out at DMFox705 on Twitter. Doug joins us now. Good morning, man. How are we doing? This is our first chat of the year. How are the minor leagues, man?
The minor leagues are doing great, my friend. It's good to be with you. And let's face it, when it comes to ranking farm systems and all of that kind of talk, nobody was talking about David Schneider a year ago.
Nope, they weren't. It was around this time on this show where we started. I think the show launched just after the May long weekend last year, and he was a footnote to start. And then at one point he had like 14 home runs, and then we started talking about him. So I guess I'll put you on the spot right out of the top here. Who is this year's David Schneider? Who's the guy who is going to be an everyday can't take him out of the lineup bat really, really soon? Because this lineup could use it, Doug.
Wow, that is such a good question. I mean, the obvious two names at the top of most people's lists would be Aurelvis Martinez and Spencer Horwitz. Aurelvis still needs to improve his defense, still needs to prove that he can hit top-quality pitching, especially high-velocity pitching, because we've seen what's happened to other top prospects so far this season. And Spencer Horwitz, I just wish he had a chance to play every day at the big league level and further his development and just kind of settle in as a guy who gets extra base hits.
Yeah, Spencer Horwitz, let's start there because he's a guy, obviously got a quick cup of coffee last year. I'm sure if there are any fans out there who scout the stat line, they look at the numbers he puts up and have to scratch their heads why he hasn't gotten more of a shot. He's hitting .333 down there. He's OPSing over .950. So he's, you know, when we're talking about OPS plus relative to league average, he's up over .150 there. He walks more than he strikes out. There's not a ton of power there. He's hit two home runs this season. He only hit 10 in 107 games down there last year. But this is a bat that should be able to play from an on-base perspective, from a bat-to-ball perspective. The tough part is when you don't hit for a lot of power and you're a first baseman slash DH type, it's hard to get that bat in the lineup, especially the way the Jays are constructed. Doug, what have you made of the fact that Spencer Horwitz is now not only seeing reps in left field the odd time, but he's played a couple games at second base now too?
My only question is what took the Blue Jays so long? It's not like two or three years ago, they didn't see when he was putting together a record hit streak in A-ball. They didn't think, you know, where is this guy going to play eventually because it's kind of crowded. It's primary position. So I'm a little surprised it's taken him that long. You don't want him developing in left field or second base at the big league level. So I think they must be thinking for now the best thing for him to do is to stay in the minors and play every day. And perhaps a cynic might suggest, too, that by not bringing him up and possibly exposing them, they still kind of maintain some trade value if they're looking, you know, with an eye towards the trade deadline. So that I think explains that. But he's got nothing left to prove at AAA, quite frankly. Maybe, yes, more pop, but other than that, nothing.
Yeah, he's 26 at this point, so I don't know that anyone's going to see him as, you know, a blue chip prospect in a trade, but certainly a guy who bat-wise looks like he could step in right now and help a major league lineup if there were a spot for him. Doug, I have seen a little bit of his left field time, and I've heard from people in the organization that it has not been the smoothest of left field reps. Did you get eyeballs at all or hear anyone fill you in on what it looked like at second base for Horwitz?
No, that I haven't, okay. And that's just a surprise to see him there. He doesn't have the kind of reactions that you would expect. I guess he's used to that side of the infield. That must be the thinking. And I guess of all the places in the infield that you wouldn't necessarily want to hide somebody, but put a guy who's weaker defensively, perhaps that's it. But that's, to me, that's at this point in his career, that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, he's 6 foot 190, and you can be 6 foot 190 and play at second base. But when you're 26 and just, you know, usually if they make a decision on a guy in his early 20s that, hey, this is a first baseman slash DH, they don't come around on those decisions and go the other way. Okay, let's look further down the farm. Someone that we haven't talked about on the show yet, but got a lot of airtime last year after the draft, is Arjun Namala. He was the Jays' first-round pick last year, 20th overall. Very cool story, and also, you know, getting a look at him now. He played 9 games in the Complex League at the tail end of last year, but really this is our first look at him. Over 29 games in A-ball, and he's very young for A-ball. He's still only 18, just past the 18.5 cutoff. Off to a bit of an iffy start at the plate, hitting .167, but some obvious power there, some obvious speed. What have you seen from or heard about Arjun Namala in his first month and a half here in pro ball?
Had a good conversation with Dunedin Blue Jays broadcaster Larry Larson last week. That's going to be up on my newsletter very shortly. And he said that there was talk among the player development people whether or not he would start the year with Dunedin or maybe stay back and extend it. Obviously, and I think that home run that he hit very late in spring training maybe made up a lot of minds, but they decided to go ahead and challenge him with an admittedly aggressive assignment. And while Arjun saw a lot of elite pitching as a high schooler and a travel ball player, there's nothing to compare to what you're going to see when you get to professional baseball. And from talking with Larry and also from my own eyes watching Dunedin's games, he's seeing a ton of spin. And so we shouldn't be surprised that he's striking out about 35% of the time. Defensively, he's been solid. He has good hands, good fundamentals, very likely that he can stick at the position. And I think the Blue Jays are just content to let him take his lumps a little bit. He's showing some signs of progress at his second home run in a week yesterday and is drawing some more walks. So I think for the foreseeable future, he's going to be penciling in at shortstop and hitting cleanup for Dunedin. And he's going to learn at the single-A level.
Yeah, it'll be fun to track how this goes over the course of the season. You know, if you see similar to when Aurelvis was very, very young for the level he was at and putting up big strikeout numbers, do you see those come down? Do you see the walk rate go up a little bit? The power is obviously going to be there. Do those other kind of underlying things, the process side things, move in the right direction along with the home runs and in Namala's case, the stolen bases as well? Pivot to the pitching side now, Doug. I know someone who you are fascinated by and have really tracked the story is Eric Pardino. So if anyone doesn't remember, Eric Pardino has been in the system since 2018, had some cool moments for Brazil in the World Baseball Classic. At one point looked like he was on the fast track to, if not as a starter, maybe be an impact bullpen arm. Again, still just 23, even though he's been around for so long, lost basically 3 full seasons to injury. And when we last talked at the end of last year, it didn't look good. He had, in 2022, put up a double-digit ERA in high A. He repeated high A last year, had an ERA up over 7 over basically a full season of relief work. I was honestly a little surprised he was still, you know, as we shrink the number of minor league contracted players teams are allowed to have, I thought maybe he would end up being a minor league free agent. He stayed in the system. He's pitched in 10 games for New Hampshire so far this year with a 2.13 ERA. And get this, 13.5 strikeouts per 9 with under 1 walk per 9. Maybe some of this is 12 innings of noise here out of the bullpen, Doug. But, man, would it be a good story if Eric Pardino got some of the, even as a reliever, prospect traction back. What have you seen or heard about Pardino so far?
Blake, he is a completely different pitcher than where he was at a little bit over a year ago. I was in Vancouver mid-April. Last year, he had just had a disastrous outing, and they had brought in a number of player development people to work with him. And conversations I had with people connected with the ball club were talking about body language and all kinds of things like that. And this year, well, I think it can be summed up best. I asked Joel Bonnet, who was Pardino's pitching coach last year at Vancouver, as well as this year at New Hampshire. So he's probably in as good a position as anyone outside of Eric to know himself. And he thinks that finally Pardino is he's clear of any worries about setbacks from Tommy John. And it just serves as a cautionary tale that for every guy that comes back in a year, there are many more that need 2 years or possibly even 3 years, like C.J. Van Eyck, Pardino's teammate in New Hampshire, is undergoing the same thing. So I think he's injury-free. I think his head is clear. His mechanics are so good. He's dominating double-A hitters right now. He's pounding the strike zone, not wasting many pitches. And, yes, he still has a long way to go before he would ever see a big league bullpen. But he's taken to this new role, and man, six, we don't want to jinx anything, but six consecutive scoreless outings, and they look easy for them.
And a 19-1 strikeout to walk ratio, just ridiculous at any level with any backstory. Doug, when you're looking at these prospects, particularly relievers, obviously a lot more can, something has happened to put that guy in the bullpen before he gets to the major league anyway. You know, oftentimes we'll see guys fail as starters before they move to the bullpen. Some guys, though, are just from an early point bullpen prospects. We look at Connor Cook, who's in AAA, Mason Flaherty, who's off to a nice start, even a Kai Peterson at the lower levels of the minors. When you're working through these guys, how does how you're evaluating them shift if a guy's already in the bullpen in the mid-minors versus a guy who is starting and you know he's going to move to the bullpen eventually?
Well, I've been doing this for a dozen years now, and I've seen a revolution in thinking in that term. It used to be that the bullpen guys were guys who kind of petered out at Double A, and maybe their developmental clock was ticking. And so, like, I'm thinking of Orion Tapera, for example, who was moved into a bullpen role and has turned into a fairly decent MLB reliever. Now it's changing. Tim Mesa is probably the first guy that I can think of that has been a reliever almost exclusively all the way through the minors. And I think teams will still opt. If you have a hard-throwing guy who maybe needs his arsenal pared down, maybe lets his fastball play up in shorter stints, and yes, you're still going to see starters being moved into the upper levels of the minors, into that role. But more and more, we're seeing these guys come along. And a guy I know you mentioned, and I've written about as well, is Kai Peterson, an uneven left-hand hitter with a lot of deception in his delivery. And who knows how that could play out. So that's interesting to see how that's changed over the course of probably the last 10 years.
Yeah, Kai Peterson, a 20th round pick last year, who started at A-ball here, 277 ERA with monster strikeout numbers over his first 13 relief innings there. He was mentioned in your latest newsletter in terms of guys who are trending up, Doug, and I know you've got another newsletter coming out this week on guys who are off to a slower start the other end of that, but let's stay with the positive since we need them right now. Another name you mentioned in the kind of trending upward group is pitcher Connor O'Halloran. What has clicked for O'Halloran? This is another guy who, fifth round draft pick last year, got his feet wet at A ball with a couple of relief appearances, but is back to starting now to start this year.
He is just a dude that knows how to pitch. He knows how to sequence. He knows how to locate all of his pitches. Now you expect a college pitcher from a major program like Michigan, where O'Halloran went to school, you would expect a guy of his stature to dominate single-A hitters. So he is doing that. So we'll get a better idea as he moves up the ladder. He's not the hardest throwing guy in the world. He does have a slider with a ton of spin on it, which he locates so well. But right now I think he's, 182 opponents batting average against him. So I think he's due for a move up to Vancouver soon. And, yes, he's getting single-A hitters out now like he should, but he's also going to learn to command his breaking pitches better. He might add a little bit to his fastball as he continues up too. So he's been a very pleasant surprise so far this year.
That's good to hear. It's always good to hear those things, especially on the pitching side, because I'd imagine some of your slow start guys in this week's newsletter are going to be on the pitching side, in addition to Ricky Tiedemann, Brandon Barriera, Landon Moraitis, all dealing with injury stuff. We've had slow starts here for guys like Chad Dallas, Dev Harrison, CJ Van Eyck, who you mentioned a little earlier. Is this just some early season noise? Are any of those, we'll focus it on the healthy guys, Chad Dallas, Dev Harrison, CJ Van Eyck, are what those guys dealing with in any of those cases something we need to be worried about beyond just, hey, it's a tough start to the season?
I think we have to be honest here. We're not looking at top of the rotation guys
right
here, but we are looking at guys that have a shot at the big league. And the thing about as you move up in the minor leagues, the hitters chase less and less at each level. And I think that's what Dallas is discovering right now. He's just missing his spots in key situations and giving some contact. And I mean, he rocketed relatively through the system last year, so he still has some time maybe to refine that command. Van Eyck has had a couple of really good outings, and he's got a really bloated ERA, but I think in his first start he gave up 9 runs and didn't get out of the first inning. So that kind of tends to inflate the old ERA at this time of season.
Yeah, it certainly does. It sounds like we may have disconnected with Doug here. We'll see if he comes back. But otherwise, CJ Van Eyck is a guy who, you know, you're probably familiar with. He was a second round pick a couple years back. And yeah, the nine earned runs in one third of an inning will certainly inflate your ERA. He's had a couple rough ones prior to that. But as Doug alluded to there, his last start at AA was five shutout innings against Washington's AA affiliate. So hopefully trending in the right direction there. Doug, the one name you didn't get to mention before we briefly disconnected there, Dev Harrison, also at AA. One of the kind of breakout guys last year in a swingman role. It really looks like, from the numbers anyway, struggling to find the strike zone as well as he did last year. Where are we on Dev Harrison at AA?
He is definitely a guy who's discovered hitters at AA don't chase. They have a plan. He's, again, not one of the hardest throwers in the world, so he really relies on commanding the edges of the strike zone. And he's had his difficulty, as I kind of expected he would, because he had a history of being a reliever in college, and I think that's still possibly where we might see him one day. But he's getting the innings as a starter, which the Blue Jays like to do. So not surprised to see he's had a bit of a hiccup at AA so far. But as you say, his last start seems to be turning things around.
All right. So people can check out more about the slow start guys in your newsletter coming out this week. Last week's newsletter was guys who are trending up. Before I let you go here, if there's a name who's off the radar, who you and I haven't talked about, or you think fans maybe haven't heard of, who we should have eyeballs on a little bit more, and I'd imagine your answer is going to come at maybe the lower levels of the minors, who would that guy be right now? Who's the kind of off-radar guy who's most of interest to us?
Well, given what's happened to three of the Blue Jays' top pitching prospects and their arm issues this year, I hope they're putting some bubble wrap around a 20-year-old pitcher with an Eden named Fernando Perez, who already Baseball America says has the best command in the organization. And he's just a man among boys right now in single-A ball. And he is definitely the most promising prospect on either side of the ball right now for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, that's good to know. It's not the first time his name has come up on the show either. I think you and I spoke about him late last year, as well as Jeff Ponce, who got to see him at the Complex League. So interesting guy to keep an eye on. Doug, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning. Keep up all the great work with the Future Blue Jays newsletter over at Beehive now.
Blake, thanks so much for having me.
Doug Fox, DM Fox 705. On Twitter, the Future Blue Jays newsletter over at Beehive. He's also the author of two cool baseball books, On Account of Darkness, The Summer Ontario Baseball Broke the Color Barrier, and Severn Sound, A Big Leaguer Comes to Port McNichol. So make sure you're checking out all of Doug's great stuff. At least there's a little bit of positivity down in the minors. Not universally, certainly. No one can seem to pitch at AAA. I watched a good chunk of Aaron Sanchez's Buffalo Bisons debut on the weekend. He gave them four innings. They didn't go particularly well, but as we talked about with Arden when that signing first happened, that's about getting guys who can throw innings at the AAA level, not necessarily guys who are on the major league radar anytime soon. He is not that. There are precious few of those for the Blue Jays right now. So they'll need to get the pitching going at the major league level. A nice step forward yesterday for Alek Manoah, less so for this bullpen that ranks 30th in baseball in ERA. Eric Swanson having another rough one yesterday. Not sure what the plan on that one is going to be. It seems maybe there's a tipping thing that him and John Schneider have spoken about. Maybe he was rushed back a little bit from that injury. He obviously dealt with some personal family stuff during spring training as well. Also, sometimes these things just happen with relievers and then they find it after. Right now, though, I think the Jays probably need to have Eric Swanson find that in lower leverage spots, because it's been a tough go there. We'll see if Jose Barrios can give them some length tonight. The Jays actually don't have an off day between series for the first time in a while. Luckily, they did have Manoah give them seven yesterday. Kikuchi give them eight on Friday. So the bullpen should be heading into this Baltimore series in pretty good shape. Swanson probably the only guy who's down today behind Barrios. The bigger question is going to be, though, I guess there is the question of how a lineup that could put seven lefties in there handles Jose Barrios and his new-ish pitch mix toward left-handed hitters. That's something I'm going to talk about on Blue Jays Central tonight. I'll be on there with Jamie and Joe for a little bit. But yeah, how do the Blue Jays get offense again? How do they get offense off Corbin Burns and one of the best cutters we've ever seen? Again, guys hitting sub 200 on that, slugging barely over 300 against it. I don't think you need me to do the sales job on why Corbin Burns is a difficult matchup for the Blue Jays here. He also has that changeup that, you know, if you were thinking, hey, put a bunch of lefties in there that can hit a little better off that cutter, maybe. Yeah, he's got that nasty changeup to lefties as well. He has a 2.83 ERA. This is a first place Baltimore Orioles team. So Jose Berríos, Corbin Burns tonight, Chris Bassett, Kyle Bradish tomorrow, Yusei Kikuchi, Cole Irvin in a 12:35 series finale on Wednesday. It's Dan Buck and Hazel on the call, Jamie and Joe on Blue Jay Central, Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue on the radio, Shai Davidi on the ground in Baltimore, Blair and Barker 2-4, and then again for Jays Talk postgame. Thanks to Dan Shulman, to Doug Fox, to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick. I hope you all have a great Monday. We will talk to you tomorrow.